Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Soon, Yukon Quest champion dog musher Brent Sass is headed back to Alaska's other 1,000-mile sled dog race, the Iditarod, a race in which a decade ago he took Rookie of the Year honors. Sass is originally from Minnesota and lived in Fairbanks in the Goldstream Valley before moving a little farther north to Joe Bush Creek near Manly Hot Springs. Sass joins us now from Fairbanks, where he's been getting ready before heading south for the Iditarod ceremonial start in Anchorage on March 7th. Hi, Brent.
How's it going?
Going good. Thanks for joining us here remotely. Before I ask you about your third championship run in the Yukon Quest this year, what are you up to in Fairbanks?
We're here for the EKGs for the Iditarod and the vet check here. Just all that pre-race stuff, trying to get that crossed off the list before one more trip back home to spend 4 or 5 days back at home before we head south to Anchorage.
How much do you like these town trips or heading to Anchorage at all?
Town trips are never my favorite thing, you know, but it's all a necessity for the race, and I get that. And heading down to Anchorage, you know, I'm really excited about this year's Iditarod, and so I think by the time that comes, you know, I'll be ready.
Well, first, tell me about your Yukon Quest this year. It sounded like a little bit of a slog in some sections, some snow on the trail, and it really seemed like a race between you and Michelle Phillips for most of the way. Is that about right?
Yeah, you know, it was a slog. There's no doubt. You know, the trail was pretty much all blown in for the whole section of the Yukon River. And then at the end of the race, the last couple hundred miles, we were hit with a pretty big snowstorm, which slowed everything way down. And yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, once we left Circle, it kind of became a race between Michelle and I, and it was really fun racing against her, and we've kind of had an ongoing rivalry for a lot of years. We both run the Quest a lot of years, and it was a lot of fun, and she has a really, really good dog team, but yeah, we were able to overcome it.
Was there ever a point where you thought she was gonna overtake you for real? I mean, I guess you guys were kind of leapfrogging a little bit there, but you know, according to run rest schedules, I mean, did you ever think that you weren't going to win it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I never, I had a lot of confidence in my dog team, you know, but I was running a lot less of a aggressive race for the second half, just cause I wanted to run my dogs. And, she was doing some really long runs, and sometimes that pays off and sometimes it doesn't. And I just had to really stick to my plan and to my schedule and to what was best for my dogs and believe in that plan. And we did. And, you know, as those plans were developing, it wasn't easy to be sitting there and watching her go by me and know that I had 3 more hours of rest to rest the dog at that stop before I'd get up and give chase. So it was definitely a lesson in patience and just believing in my plan. And in the end, it prevailed.
Sure did. You know, back-to-back championships, a third total. You know, I'm going to ask you, because you've run the Quest a lot now, and you're definitely part of that family, and I guess it had its smallest field ever this year. It's always kind of had this vibe of being a much more grassroots race, less media hype than the Iditarod, certainly. It's more about the dogs and about the mushers. But I think people, you know, that are involved, maybe, you know, race fans are potentially worried about the Yukon Quest future, smaller purses, maybe attracting fewer mushers. What do you think they should do differently, if anything? And just generally, what do you think about all that?
I mean, yeah, I mean, the Quest is my race. I really thoroughly love the Quest. It's what got me started on this 1,000-mile journey. And, you know, yeah, it's definitely concerning that it was the smallest field in race history. And I think that there needs to be some major changes. I think there needs to be more focus on fundraising and creating a bigger purse. I think that's going to be one of the biggest aspects about attracting more mushers. And then I think it's up to a lot of us mushers to just keep spreading the word and keep signing up for the race. And I have hope that the Quest will bounce back. And you know, I mean, last year we had one of the biggest fields at 30s or 28 some starters. So You know, I think it's a partly an atmosphere of the of just the mushing world in general. I mean, the Iditarod's numbers are way down as well, you know, compared to 5, 6, 7 years ago. So I think maybe just the whole sports and maybe a little bit of a lull here right now. But I have faith that the Quest will bounce back. It's such a great event. And like you say, a grassroots event with you get to the race and it's just like a big family reunion. And that is something that I don't know that the Iditarod will ever be able to accomplish just because it's such a larger event. And I think that is always going to attract a certain amount of people, and hopefully we can just draw in some more people. And I think the race organization got the point this year with this low turnout for starters, and hopefully they're going to really kick it into high gear, and hopefully us mushers can help them create a more successful race for next season.
We were talking a little bit about the Iditarod, and I think you said something along the lines last year of, you know, they were on the way to straightening out some of the things that ended up sort of being controversial here recently. Do you think they've done that? I mean, do you think they're on the right track? Have they made the changes that you think mushers wanted to see?
I mean, I think they made a lot of the changes that mushers wanted to see. I mean, the new board and the new president or CEO, and I think those were some of the biggest things. You know, it all starts with the guys in charge, and I think now that there's some new people in charge, I hope that the race is moving in a new direction. You know, I'm pretty removed from all of that now. You know, I ran the race in 15 and 16, you know, in 15 got the DQ and had a little bit of animosity towards the race, and then kind of had my own issues in 16, and so I've definitely taken a break from the Iditarod and just sort of had to reset my whole calibration of where I was going with my career, and now that I've done that and come back and won 2 quests in a row, I feel like the Iditarod has made some changes and enough that made me want to come back, and I'm really looking forward to getting back out on the trail and I'll get immersed back into the Iditarod scene here now and hopefully see the changes that I wanted to see. I mean, they got rid of the no two-way communication devices rule, so I don't have to worry about carrying my iPod Touch anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely at the time it was a very controversial thing. You had this iPod. I remember because we saw each other there and you had this like iPod Touch and they disqualified you because it potentially could have been used as a communication device in Tanana. And, you know, I mean, they changed that rule to be pretty wide open to allow communication. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that's changed the Iditarod just in general?
You know, I don't know. In the end, I don't think it makes any difference. I think once you get out there, it's the best musher that brought the best dog team to the race, the most well-prepared dog team to the race. I think that having two-way communication does very little to give anyone an advantage. I understood why the rule was in place. I felt that the whole iPod Touch thing was a little too far, and the fact that there were a lot of other mushers that were carrying the same device, and I just kind of got used as a trendsetter there. But you know, in the end, I'm long over that whole deal, and now that the rule is gone completely, you know, I think that no one has to worry about it anymore, and we can all carry our devices, and I don't think that there's any advantage or disadvantage to being able to carry those devices.
So, I just wanted to ask you about the team. How are the dogs looking after the Yukon Quest, and are you thinking about pretty much taking the same team on the Iditarod?
Yeah, the dogs are looking excellent. I'm really happy with how they bounced back. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to bounce back from. We just had to put a little more weight on them. Obviously, they lose a little weight during the quest, but the dogs bounced back great. I'm going to have, right now, I mean, all of them from the race are going to vet checks, so all 14 of the dogs are going to go through Iditarod vet checks. I had a friend, Nora, Celine, running 3 of my dogs, and one of those dogs are going to be at my vet check. So I'm hoping to have 12 to 13 Quest dogs in the Iditarod team, and then I had 4 dogs back at home that I'm choosing from to take the vet check as well. So I'll vet check 17 dogs, of which 15 of them have just run the Yukon Quest. So yeah, I'm really happy with the way the team looks right now. And you know, there's a few things I need to get done. There's a little more weight to put on a couple of them, and a couple of nicks and dings that are getting healed up. But we still have 2 weeks before the start, which is kind kind of hard to believe. Like, we're doing all this vet check stuff and everything, and it feels like the race is going to happen tomorrow. But in the end, we still have 2 more weeks of rest and recovery for the dogs, and we're just going to keep them moving. And I'm really, really happy with how they've bounced back from the quest, though.
That's kind of the thing, right, is like keeping them going between races. I mean, we've heard that, you know, their metabolism is such that once they've run a 1,000-mile race, they're actually doing pretty well if you keep them moving, you know, up until the next 1,000-mile race. How are you accomplishing that? I mean, if you have to come into town and do stuff like that, I mean, how do you get that done?
Yeah, well, luckily I have really good help. My girlfriend Ida and my handlers back at home have been really doing a good job of taking care of pretty much everything else that has to get done, and I've been running dogs. The dogs got about 5 days off after the quest, and since the quest, I've put over 200 miles on the dogs, and I've just kept them moving. They're eating like wolves. They've gained all their weight back. And it's mainly about focusing on the dogs, and luckily with the crew of support that I have, I've been able to do that. And now, you know, they're going to get a couple days off here for vet checks and travel, and that's fine. You know, we'll have 4 more days back in Eureka where I'll run them every day, and I'm going to go up to the White Mountains on my way back home here now and do one last long camping run and kind of get the whole team back on the same page and try and make my final decisions here sooner than later, so that I can focus on the 14 that I want to take on the Iditarod.
I think you mean, you know, final decisions, probably like which dogs, but what are some of the last sort of things that you've got to wrap up as far as getting ready for Iditarod here in the next couple of weeks?
The biggest thing is these ECGs and the vet checks, which I'm going to knock off the list tomorrow. And then after that, it's just keeping the dogs moving. You know, I mean, most of this stuff happens, you know, race week, of course, we'll be traveling. It's a 12-hour trip for us to drive from Eureka to Anchorage. So we'll do that drive on the 3rd, and then just starts all the pre-race meetings and all that stuff. And training will be over by then. The dogs will get the rest. I'll try and squeeze in one run down there in Anchorage before the start. But really, it's these vet checks and ECGs. Knocking those off the list is a big thing, and getting the okay from the vet, which I've got 100% confidence that all the dogs are in great shape. But you never know. It's always good to get that second opinion from the vet. And then, of course, all the blood work and ECGs is an important thing for the dogs to go through. But having come off the quest, I know where these dogs are at. I know they're physically fit and ready to run another 1,000-mile race.
I mean, I have to ask this. You know, I mean, you had had kind of a rough go the last Iditarod that you were in. You took a year off from both races. Then you won the Yukon Quest. Took the year off from the Iditarod, and now you're back. You just did the quest. You just won it. You're heading back to Iditarod. After all that, are you nervous about coming back to Iditarod?
No. I'm a completely different musher than I was in 2016. I'm a way more composed musher. I've learned a lot from my failures and mistakes, and I think that this sport is all about. It's a constant learning experience, and I had a couple of years there where I was learning a lot, and you know, I was having some success, and I was having some ultimate failures in there too, and you know, going into this Iditarod, I've got nothing but confidence. I mean, you're going up against the best dog teams in the world. There's some really amazing dog teams out there, and I'm not going to say I'm going to go out there and win the Iditarod, but I do have confidence in my dog team, and I have nothing but excitement. The biggest thing is run your own race, and that's the one of the most important things I've learned over the last 5 years, and it's tattooed on my arm and as a constant reminder, and that is my goal, is to go out and have fun and run my own race and focus on my own dog team. And it's the things that I had problems with, you know, 14, 15, 16, those years I was you know, focusing on my team, but I was also looking around and being influenced by what was happening around me. And I feel like over the last couple of years, especially the last 2 Yukon Quests, I didn't even care about the competition. I proved that in this year's race by just letting kind of Michelle play out what she was doing and sticking to my own schedule. And in the end, it worked out. And I feel like if I can do that in Iditarod, we'll have a real successful race. I mean, there's obviously a little bit of nerves, but in the end, I've got nothing but confidence in the dog team that I'm going to have ahead of me.
I should have asked you this earlier, but was there a particular dog in this year's Yukon Quest that really came through for you, that you were really happy with their performance?
Yeah, I mean, all of them, but the two main leaders that I used throughout the race, Morello and Woody. And Morello is actually a daughter of Basin, who was my Golden Harness winner in 2015 at my own my very first win. And she was in the race last year and was one of my main leaders. But this year she rose to the occasion and really just led the team. And then this dog Woody, who was a 2-year-old in my team last year, just rose to the occasion, especially out on the Yukon, you know, with all those challenging conditions. We were battling a lot of trail breaking, and so I was kind of switching leaders around just to try and see who did the best. And this dog Woody really, really shined through. And he's a son of Merc, of one of my dogs that were in my 15 team as well. Basically, this whole team is just sons and daughters of my 15 race, winning race in the Quest. And so it's a lot of the same genetics, and it all goes back to my main dog Silver, and they're almost all related to him in some way. And so it's a really special group of dogs that all but one, it comes from my genetics and dogs that I've had their entire life.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Silver, your legendary lead dog that has gone through some pretty cool adventures with you. And I mean, I definitely would encourage people to go just look up, you know, Brent Sass and Silver for past stories about that. But just, I guess, last question, how's Silver doing?
He's great. He's 18 years old and still running the show. You know, he walks a little slower, is a little bit stiffer, but he's out there greeting me when I come back from runs and stealing snacks from the dogs and you know, being the alpha male still. It's pretty fun. At 18 years old, you know, you're just fortunate for every second that you have with him. And he's defied all odds as far as his lifespan and what he's accomplished. So I think he's super proud. He understands that all these dogs are have come out of him, and it's just a real special thing to still have him around and be watching over the team. And it's priceless. It's priceless to still have him around.
All right. Well, that was 3-time Yukon Quest champion Brent Sass, the reigning champion of that race. He's headed to the Iditarod here very soon. That ceremonial start is March 7th in Anchorage. The clock starts ticking the next day when they leave Willow. Brent, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.